Okay, welcome to the Arizona State Hospital Independent Oversight Committee, and I'd like to welcome everyone. It is 6:02 on January 20th, 2022. Does anyone have any disclosure of conflict of interest? No? Okay. Were you able to review the last meeting minutes for the committee members?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Kay, I'm not sure if you got all the information yet, because the hospital said that they were unaware that you were voted in as a member until today when I reminded them.
Okay.
Okay. So next month, hopefully it'll be better.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Okay. So do I have a motion to approve minutes as proposed? And the unit may want to do *6 to mute so we don't get the echo. That's good. Thank you. You can always unmute.
All motion.
Okay.
This is Dee. All motion.
Okay. Dee motions.
I'll second. It's Melissa.
Melissa seconds. All in favor? Aye. Anyone opposed? Okay. I see a few others have joined. I see Summer has joined. Anyone else that's joined that wants to be reflected on the meeting minutes can speak up now.
This is Leon. I've joined.
Hi, Leon.
Hey.
Okay. So Melissa has to get off by 6:30. Melissa, do you want to go first, or do you want me to just review the update from ADOA, other IOC, and the action items, and then go on?
Yeah, I think you can do that first, Lori. That's fine.
Okay. So Larry, do you have any updates from ADOA?
Yeah, a couple quick updates. I had been working on the website for the committees on the application process, which I did find out today that there's a couple little things that I need to fix and work on for the group. I streamlined that a little bit, so you don't have to worry about DDD access or getting confused on which agency it goes to. So it's just one streamlined, one simple application. And then I'll work with the applicant and the liaisons to facilitate that. I added two tabs on your landing page, so which reflects your annual reports are loaded on there and your committee guidelines. So everything's in one spot for the committee. So if you get on there and you want to toggle around and look at old reports and new reports, everything's on there for you to look at.
Okay.
So please take a look at it. Let me know if you have any questions or concerns, and I'll be happy to address those.
Yeah.
Other than that, Lori, I don't have any other updates for the group. Is any questions that I might answer you might have?
You may want to update now because about one of our action items asking for the files to be retained longer than 90 days. On the website, so we can see the incident, accidents, decision letters, seclusion. Right now, for our committee, every 90 days they drop off. And why that's problematic is by the time with this asynchronous, they don't attend our meetings, by the time we vote and they respond, it's, you have 2 months right there. And if we want to look back at anything, more likely than not, it's dropped off the site.
Yes, that's correct. And what the issue is that I don't the having the records available after 90 days is going to be an issue for the group, obviously, as you stated. So with the data sharing agreement and the QM portal that Access has built out to load these reports on, it drops after 90 days. There's nothing we can do about that unless there's some major renovations done on the existing portal, which I don't know can be done or not. I just don't know. I'm not an IT expert and I don't have a consultant, an IT expert on that. So I don't know what can be done on that other than making a motion and to ask ask leadership to reload the existing prior months that have dropped off and have them reload back on the QM portal for the committee if needed. And that way you can have everything there for you. And what I would think would be makes more sense is to separate those by folders, so the older reports will be separated from the newer reports. So that's something that I believe the committee should push forward for and ask for. And then I think that would solve some of the issues till we can get the bigger problem solved, because it's going to take a while. If it can be done at all, I just don't know at this point. So that's the update on the record retention on the QM portal.
Okay. Thank you, Larry. So
do we need a motion to do that?
I think we could motion to ask the ASH administration, whoever loads the reports, to make sure before the 90 days is up where they're going to drop, that they reload them so that we at least have 6 to 9 months worth of
May I ask a question?
Mm-hmm.
I hope that's not me. This is Dr. Potts. Larry, does the data sharing agreement only mandate or stipulate to 90 days worth of information being shared? Is that what the limitation may be?
No, I think it's a software issue within the QM portal. I don't think it's the actual data sharing agreement. It might be tied to that, Dr. Potts. I'm not entirely sure.
Well, here's the question I have, because we discussed, mm-hmm. and I appreciate letting me talk. I am an ad hoc member, I think. So,
yes, sir.
We have, with our IOC, we have, as we heard the other day, because they don't go away, the reports. And whoever has 37 really has an annoying little beep there at the end of their, but anyway.
Yeah, I muted them.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, thanks. I haven't. So anyway, so we have our records stay there for, as they said, for almost forever. And I'm wondering if Lori, if your stuff is imported to the Access QM portal, it should be on the Access QM portal under their IT guidelines. So I guess that's the question I have, is maybe to see with Frederica or with CJ first to say, hey, is it on your side or the other side? Because writing ASH may be something you do then after you find out that it's not, because they may just bounce ping pong back and forth and drag it on forever. Anyway, that's just a thought, sir.
Yeah. I agree, Dr. Potts. And I think it might be the format that it's in. It's not in the format. I just don't know, to be honest with you. But we could certainly push the question back up to ASH leadership to have them review that and look at that again to find out if it can be done.
I would prefer a format that I've heard that the other IOCs have, which is they get a kind of a spreadsheet and they can look at trends and
correct.
All that kind of stuff. Ours is just a picture. And all sent over in a PDF. So,
yeah, it's just almost like a data dump type thing where you just dump all in there. Yeah. So, yeah, it would be nice to have it in an Excel format, so that way you can track and trend, you can run pivot tables, you can do, you can look at various different ways to look at things, create graphs, that sort of thing. So, no, I agree with you there. But for the time being, I think the best way to do that to save the angst of the committee on the reviewing of these reports is to have them reload those for the time being until we can figure out another way of doing it.
Okay.
I think that would be the best, but again, that's a committee's decision, and that's just some feedback I wanted to give the group.
So I think didn't we already vote to go ahead and ask them to do that? So that's done.
Yes.
Okay, so
okay.
Next thing, because I know Melissa has a hard stop, I can give you quickly, ASH administration had some clarifications for us. First, they just wanted me to let everyone know that on that patient that committed suicide with scissors, that the scissors were not in the patient's neck and were not pulled out. They were found laying next to the patient. So I told them that I would communicate that since they choose not to attend. Also, they said that they have an agreement with Alliance Pet Therapy. They have one scheduled for the civil side, but they have no providers that want to come on to the forensic side. So they've moved forward. They have found someone, but they don't have anyone that's willing to go on to the forensic side. So that's a work in progress. They also updated me that the HIPAA investigation, where we had a patient that said that the chief medical officer had come in to have a discussion in a conference room that followed him out into the day room, and they had opened an investigation. It was found to be unsubstantiated. And I think when we looked at the video, it was so far and so grainy, and you couldn't hear anything, I can see, because it was very poor quality and it was poor placement where it occurred. The other news, which is good news, is that, you know, we have advocated strongly that ASH administration look at their outing policies and their community visits, and they said there are changes to the congregate setting outings. They're altering it to reflect the CMS and CDC recommendations. So there's room to potentially open to the possibility of passes with some discrimination. But again, if it's more than 10% spread, they're working on it now. There's no telling when it's going to be open because, as everyone knows, COVID is exploding right now. So just communicate that. Their other main point is that the point of PASS is for treatment teams. It's not, the point of the PASS is not to leave the campus. And this is from Dr. Woods, the CMO. It's needed to evaluate the patients in a less restrictive environment to measure their strength, their stress tolerance, and their impulse control. And that, remember that the forensic campus, they have to run it based on the safest environment. And the civil is kind of the least restricted environment. The whole point of PASS is the ability to exhibit pro-social behavior, impulse control, restraint. They need to go in an environment and conditions to show pro-social behavior. I think my point being, that's exactly why we've asked them for alternate progression planning for the last year and a half to 2 years, because it is to show certain behaviors and traits. It's not to go to someplace in the community. So I guess after all this time, we agree that there would be another way to do that, but they are working on that as well. Any questions for any of the committee members or Jack about the ASH update?
Lori, it's Dee. I did have somebody from, let me look at it again. I just had it up here a second ago. Pets on Wheels or something like that. Let me just see what it was. That agreed that they could probably have somebody come out to the forensic side. So it's called Pets on Wheels. I could reach out to her again because I spoke to her, gosh, this was back in November. I spoke with her at length, and she had just moved out of the Phoenix area but was still willing to come into Phoenix and come to the state hospital. She said, you know, she might not be able to get there very often, but that her dogs are certified, and she is, I think, up in Cottonwood or something like that. She would be willing to do that. So if you guys would like for me to reach out to her again, I'm happy to do that.
I would think that knowing the bureaucracy, if it's not someone that they've already signed the agreement, which is that Alliance Pet Therapy, then they, chances are they have to start the process to allow them as an approved vendor or something. I mean,
right. Yeah. I kind of assumed there would be something like that, but I did find somebody who was willing to, is what I'm saying. And she thought there might even be somebody in the Phoenix area, but then I just didn't reach back out to her. So.
Okay. Well, if you want to reach out, we can mention that. So with that being,
Lori, may I ask, did your committee contact the Alliance, or was the state hospital that contacted the Alliance for Pets?
I think that Dee did a lot of work up front to try to get someone that would provide pet therapy for the hospital. And we turned all that information over to the hospital because we can only, you know, we can't.
Right. Well, here's my sense in having been in jail for so many years. If they have someone who's willing to go to the civil side, my sense is you may wish to individually contact them and explain to them what the forensic side is, because you may be able to give a better example of what it is than telling them it's full of rabid, you know, dog killers. Just a thought.
That's true. That's a valid point. I can reach out and talk to the hospital. Let's see. Other than that, we can look at the responses to our requests, some of which, the dog therapy, we just talked about that. Privacy, the HIPAA violation, we just talked about that. The fact that the documents are not controlled by ASH, but access, we discussed that. Now, the other thing that we really wanted to get, and I really don't think that we got a really adequate response, is we wanted to know the staffing guidelines for each unit. What are the staff numbers on each unit for the last year, actual versus goal? What are the specific numbers? What's optimal versus what was actually staffed? And that's because we're hearing a lot from patients, from families, from others, that it's at a dangerously low level at times, or it's impeding mall time, treatment time, activities. Basically, what even in our meeting, they said that they refer us to the governing body reports, which will just show us open vacancies. That has nothing to do with how many people were on the unit, with permanent versus temporary. I just want to know, was there a nurse, two nurses? Were there four techs? Was there one tech and one nurse, as we've heard at times? But they have not responded with what we wanted. So the committee, do you feel that we should ask again? Because I really don't want to see that there's 79 open recs for the hospital. That doesn't help us.
Hi, this is Dee. I say we do ask, you know, again and push forward with that. I do believe that it's a chronic issue, and I feel like it is impacting the patient and the types of services that they're getting or not getting, I should say, because of the lack of staffing.
I agree. I think it's really important to know that.
Yeah.
So.
So I think that we'll motion that we do want this information. They pay people. I'm sure they clock in. They should know who worked, who didn't work. What I know, Dr. Wood said that they flex staffing based on acuity. I think that's what you said, Larry. You were on the call with me. So fine, if the acuity on the unit is low and they think it's appropriate for two techs and one nurse or whatever, that should be noted as well. But we'd like more details like we asked. So I'd like to resubmit that we ask our action item number 5 again, as I just read to you guys. Do we have a second?
I second.
Okay. And all in favor?
Aye.
Okay. So moved. Okay. And then again, we talked and we had a pretty frank conversation about kind of discrimination of disabilities, that they were not allowing patients that have mobility issues, physical limitations, accommodation to eat dinner, and that's against the ADA. And with, I think, Ann Ronan and the disability law group, they had suggested we just file an action with the Justice Department. We did call and say we were going to do that. They wanted to work on it. They have now said that they have altered the dining schedule to where they permit people with walkers to sit in a manner that they don't have to climb into the seats. So if that's not the case, then we will move forward. So we'll ask patients if they are, have been accommodated, but the hospital said that they now have accommodated by staggering the shifts of eating. The other, okay, the resolution group. It was very interesting, as Leon let us know, that in 2014, resolution group took 2 weeks, and now it's taking a year or more. And they said, in reviewing available resolution group going back to 2012, there has not been a group that was less than 8 months in duration. So Leon, they're saying that since 2012, it's been 8 months, not 2 weeks. Subcomponents may be 2 weeks, but the total process is and always has been the better part of a year. The current groups are larger than groups in the past decade, but continue to move forward on schedule. Resolution group is a process group, and the duration of the group is largely dependent on the participation's engagement and progress in addressing the events that led up to the hospitalization. The most recently completed resolution group had a duration of over a year, largely because they were unable to mix units during the pandemic. The most recent group prior to 2020 had a duration of 8 months with 3 participants. Patients are not admitted to the forensic unit in order to check the boxes and be discharged. Rather, they require time and a variety of therapeutic interventions in order to prepare for reintegration in the community. We encourage the patients to see resolution group as an opportunity for growth, insight, change, healing, instead of a hurdle or a burden. So open for discussion with the committee members and Jack.
This is Kay. I have a question.
Go ahead, Kay.
I have a question. Like, does resolution group actually violate HIPAA? Because from my understanding, from listening to other patients, they actually have to describe in detail their mental health history. And is that legal?
I don't know. Jack, do you know, as far as in a group setting, if they're saying that you must disclose your condition, all the activities that led up to your incident?
I don't know, and that's a very good question. And the other thing is, resolution group being mandatory is also, I think, a serious question, because it goes against individualized treatment plans.
So do we want to ask anything? I mean, we've asked if resolution group is required many times over the last 2 years, and they've said it's not required. It's up to the treatment team. We've had comments from members on our or patients on the forensic side, and they say that they are not put up for progression unless they've gone to resolution group.
This is Kay, the patient advocate again. My personal experience is that my treatment team told me that they believe that in order for me to get levels, that I do have to complete resolution group, and that was one of the barriers that was preventing me from moving forward.
I think the HIPAA thing is a good question. Holly might have an idea on that.
Okay, we can ask some other committee members, some attorneys about that. So do we have a motion to follow up and find out if it is a HIPAA concern?
Barb says yes.
Okay. So motion, Barb says yes. Do we have a second?
I motion.
This is Dee. I can second that.
Dee seconds. Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
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 So moved. We'll move on that. I realize it's getting late, Melissa. Sorry. The other was.
Sorry. I can also tell you that Bobby's particular group started last March, and they have not finished yet.
Started March. Okay. Thank you. The wireless tablets for education, entertainment, and communication are not a priority at ASH. Such devices pose a security risk and a distraction from therapeutic work. This is neither a civil or patient rights issue. We were just saying that they use them in the jails, and it seems to reduce aggression, and it helps with patients themselves. I know we did a lot of work trying to see if we could get them to adopt that, but it looks like it's not a priority for them.
So, excuse me, Lori, no, I did see that, and I was actually quite surprised. Is there a study on what you just said that we could show them? And if we can secure funding for that, maybe convince them, because I think it would be a great idea for the patients to have that.
So, Alice, I sent all that information. I don't know if I sent it to the hospital or if I just sent it to you, Lori. But, yeah, they've done studies on it. And the thing is it's not a security risk, because they're actually they go into the jails and they go into the prisons, and they're already doing this in those types of facilities. So therefore, you know, that's a moot point. Not only that, but they could also kind of control when they're able to use the tablets and when they're not. So it doesn't distract from their therapy. They don't even get charged for having it set up inside the hospital. They'll go and set it up for free.
Wow.
And then it's like $1 or $1.50 a day per tablet. And that's it.
That's all they charge.
You may also want to check, because I know Desert Fist or the county system provides them to the patients at times, especially if they're in quarantine, and that's acute psychiatric units, because there are no TVs in the rooms, and when the patients are quarantined, they're locked in, they're stayed in the room 24/7 essentially. So that may argue against them trying to play the mentally ill card, but the county does it too.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that's irrelevant.
So I see that when patients go into quarantine because they've got COVID, and it's very depressing for them to sit in a room with nothing. I don't know. I think it's such a good idea to have that.
In fact, I believe it's a human rights violation to put individuals under quarantine in the room for days, if not weeks at a time, without having that, when in any medical hospital in the country, there's a TV in the room. So there's some real interesting issues on this with COVID. I'm concerned that's being done in the acute care unit. And if they are quarantining patients at the state hospital, I think that's problematic. And at least for those patients, it could be fought for, and possibly won, that they get tablets. And that might be the camel's nose under the tent.
This is Barb. I totally agree.
So we can do some investigation, read the reports, and we do believe it could be a patient's rights issue. We'll look further into.
Yeah. Do you think that I can? Do you want me to send that information again to you, Lori? Okay. But the other thing is they offer all these educational things, so they can get certifications like in certain areas, and they can earn degrees and stuff like that. There's educational stuff in there that goes all the way from high school on up to college level. So there's a lot of benefits to this.
So we'll continue with that. The last thing, we asked them to brainstorm options for patients, courses for patients. The hospital administration said that we made many false statements regarding services and treatments offered at the hospital. Again, it would be helpful if they chose to participate and we didn't have to have this asynchronous conversation. The hospital does not offer courses, but treatment. Rehab services are part of the interdisciplinary integrated treatment services offered. The rehab team strives to meet the wide range of needs of the patients with a limited number of positions. They offer art, horticulture, mindfulness, limited vocational training, music groups, in addition to general leisure activities. On CRU, patients are allowed to do conditional release and other life skills as navigating public transit, managing bills, etc. And they can go on passes when they're in CRU.
And I read all of that, but I'm thinking when a patient gets out, especially a forensic patient, they need skills so mm-hmm. that they can secure work.
I agree.
You know, and I don't mean just paying bills and music therapy.
Yeah.
They need voc rehab.
Yeah.
Agree. Yeah, I agree. I thought it did say something in there about vocational training, although it wasn't specific.
Vocational, limited vocational training.
Uh-huh, limited.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of stuff on there. I'll have to go back and look at it again, but it actually was quite extensive, the educational opportunities, which would then fulfill one of our other things that we've been trying to do for them as well, is bring in something for them, not only to keep busy with, but so that they can become educated and not have to pay for it.
Okay, now we did have some other information from, I had some emails from other patients, but let's have Melissa talk because I know she has to leave. She can report on the virtual visits we've done since the last committee meeting. And then remember, we have the civil patient forum coming up February 4th at 1, the forensic patient forum coming up February 18th at 1, and the governing body meeting January 28th at 10 a.m.
Okay. Great. May I go, Lori?
Yeah.
Okay. So we had two patient visits on December 20th. And so I'll just go ahead and talk about the first patient was still waiting for animal therapy. So that was definitely a concern. Also, they expressed some concern that they had been eating cold food and I guess not getting enough shorter, you know, the hot meals. Also talked about because this individual is not comfortable in group settings, you know, they were concerned that they're only getting about 1 hour of program per week versus if they were comfortable in a group, they would be getting significantly more. So just to be clear on that, it's very difficult to have, it's harder to allocate one-on-one time because this person is not comfortable in a group setting.
And you know what? I think we had some thoughts that if someone has the condition of being on the spectrum and not being able to be in groups comfortably and learn in groups, is that a ADA violation by not accommodating.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Lori.
And that's where tablets could be effective in an alternative.
I also think that accommodations should be made. You know, not that we're that Jeff needs to be in the state hospital, but should it ever occur, he's on the spectrum, he's got Asperger's and he's got bipolar disorder. Why when he's been through the school system, has he had accommodations and other places, and he wouldn't have accommodations if he were in the hospital as any of the patients with disabilities like that. And the tablets is a good idea.
Mm-hmm. So I'll just go ahead and continue. So the patient's also concerned, you know, why is there no access to a legitimate law library? Even if, even if books are provided, you know, that there's a concern that 4 hours is still not enough time. And it's going to be difficult because not all the precedents are going to be in the books, because it's always changing, always being updated. They did mention that, let's see, that there was some digital access 2 times a month.
Mm-hmm.
And then in July, the forensic guidelines were amended. So any patient who, or this is what they said. So any patient who misbehaves loses computer privileges for a day. So that would be a good thing to kind of confirm. The patient was also mentioned that they were in seclusion prior to the call for about 30 minutes, and their computer privileges were taken away for 48 hours. And they questioned, what are the patient rights with regards to that? And then they also made a comment. Made a comment that administration was saying that forensic is correctional. Again, this is. What the patient said, but obviously that was a concern because it's a hospital and it's not a prison. Mm-hmm. Do you have anything to add to that, Lori? I was going to go on to the next.
I think, do we want to ask about, was there a change to the access to the library? Was that a new rule that was implemented?
Yeah, I think we do. And like, exactly what is the rule? Because I don't know that I'm clear on the relationship. You know, what does misbehave mean?
Okay. So we ask about that. What is it? What do you mean by misbehave? And is this a new consequence of losing computer privileges for a day?
Mm-hmm.
Clarify what the rules are.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Do we have a second?
Alice.
This is
Dee,
I'll second.
Second.
Yeah. Can I ask Dr. Potts a question?
You may. I don't know if I have an answer.
So are they patients under ADHS, or are they the forensic patients under DOC? What are they under?
I think, and I've got to refresh on the statute, but I'm not a lawyer, but my sense is they are patients under DHS, but they're under the jurisdiction of DOC at DHS. They sort of like DOC gives them the patients, just like if they transfer a patient to the hospital, acute care hospital has responsibility for them. That would be my guess.
So they can be treated under both of those, hats?
No, I think they have to be under the hospital. But again, that's a good question. And I think, as an aside, you ought to be getting all the updates whenever they do them. So that may be some of the requests of the state hospital. When they do have updates to one of these manuals, forensic programs, rules and guidelines, that you be apprised of them immediately.
Yeah, I think that the patients are confused. I think that family members are confused because the hospital seems to kind of use the terms interchangeably whenever it bodes their direction, you know?
Clearly.
Thank you.
Okay, Melissa.
Okay. So now moving on to the next patient that we spoke to. So the first item, so this individual went to get a third opinion on a sort of chronic medical condition. And the opinion was that they need surgery.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess it was beyond that doctor's scope. And, you know, the patient was told it could only be done, or that they could only do it at Mayo or in Tucson. But then he also said that they were waiting on the state hospital to do the surgery. I'm not exactly sure how that would happen, but they couldn't, or I guess schedule the surgery, but they were not able yet to give them a date due to everything going on with COVID and Omicron. And so that was very frustrating because this individual, again, this condition's been going on for a long time and can't get it resolved. The second item of concern was the movement of staff from one unit to another unit with sort of the alleged regard, no regard for safety. And what they meant by that was, I guess, apparently one of the units is sort of like a quarantine unit. And there was movement of staff from that quarantine unit to other units. And the staff were inconsistently wearing their masks, sometimes on their chin, not wearing it in the nurse's station, sometimes not wearing a mask at all. So I don't know if there's any kind of follow-up we want to do with that.
Yeah, we had another visit with another person on another unit that had a situation related to staff not wearing masks appropriately, that, and I can talk about it when you're done with all mm-hmm. yours.
Okay. So another medical issue, this patient has a tear in their rotator cuff, I think it was. And I guess one, so then they were told by one person that it would heal itself in time. And then the physical therapist said that it wouldn't, that is not the case. So I think that there's some concern that they're not getting the treatment that they need.
Yeah, rotator cuffs don't heal themselves.
Thank you, Dee. No, they don't.
Then there was, you know, the patient expressed some concern over the unit not being their unit not being able to have access to patio time the way they should due to lack of staff, and also concern that part of the reason might be that this patient needs, well, two staff often have to go with this patient to do things, and you know, they were questioning why. Because then that greatly reduces the staff, which then doesn't let the rest of the unit to use patio time, have access to patio time. And we've talked about that before, I know.
Yeah. And the person has mobility issues, so they're not like they're going to elope.
Right. Yeah, and then. That's kind of it. I mean, we did ask, I know, about his family, because one of his their family members had been ill, or is ill. But those were the items I had.
Okay. We had another visit, Leon, myself, and Barb. I don't know if Leon or Barb, if you want to give an update on that, and I can jump in also. We had a concern, and it had to do with, again, a patient asking staff to put the mask on correctly. And this was during heavy COVID phases over months.
Barb, do you want to give a report on that?
I think that what the patient was saying was pretty much a repetition, of what Melissa had said and what we've discussed in meetings before, although this was more in depth as to his conditions. Lori, is that correct?
Okay, so what I wrote was that our concern was that there was retaliation because this went on for a long time. It was a particular tech that came from another unit, and every time they saw the person, they didn't have the mask on, and they kept asking, please put your mask on, I don't feel safe. And at one point, someone said, do we have a problem? The head nurse and the tech pulled them apart because he then mouthed off to the person that wouldn't wear the mask correctly, allegedly. Then he wanted to file a grievance, and there were no grievances there. No, the grievance sat in the box for 3 days, and then nothing came out of the grievance, so they wondered what happened to it. Let's see. The same tech came back onto the unit again. This is days, weeks, walked past them. So it was a continual fight. And they ran and told, I think, the chief nurse. I only have the name. It begins with a D. And they threatened to put him in seclusion, which is for, you know, asking this tech to keep wearing a mask correctly. Another patient stood up for him, and he was put in seclusion. In the ITP review, Dr. Bodie seemed that this is going on. They had taken away this patient's job and his levels, took away his job and levels due to that. That was what he told us. And it wasn't until Charles Gaston, the investigator, came through the unit, and he told them that they didn't have grievances, and they had never found the grievance he wrote. So I think that they put grievances back into the unit, but it took 3 weeks for them to get grievance papers back there. So our concern was that, was this retaliation for him sticking up for himself and the unit and asking a tech to put his mask on when the hospital administration and Larry and I met a few days ago? They said it wasn't. It was not related to that. So for me, I'm wondering, should we ask? Because for us, it looks like retaliation. You're complaining about a staff member, and all of a sudden you lose privileges and your ability to work. And this went on for not days or weeks, but months, 3 months. So do we want to ask, why did they lose those privileges if it wasn't for this? If they ask us to look into specific allegations of retaliation, and we're trying, in this asynchronous mode that we're in.
I think that's a good idea, Lori. That's the...
Okay. So let's motion that we ask, and I can provide them with the patient's name if they want. But we want to find out why this patient, because to us, it looks like retaliation. Why did they lose work privileges and levels after this ongoing battle over staff not wearing masks appropriately?
Yes, I totally agree. And is there any way to see, like, I just went through a seclusion restraint refresher course over the weekend. Mm-hmm. And I guess Mercy Care was wanting some very, very specific documentation. Is there no way that we can see documentation on why, how long, all of that kind of stuff?
We can see the seclusion reports, you know, again, when they're in there, they will, if someone's in seclusion, every 15 minutes, the nurses have to check and check for the behaviors that got them in there, and check if they're still exhibiting them or not exhibiting them, and wait until they feel that they're safe to return to the regular environment. So they do that.
Well, yeah. Well, yes, that's true. And we do have to do that. We need very specific charting on the part of the nurse, the techs, the ordering practitioner, all those things documented, as well as the Q15 checks and the length of time. So that's why I wondered, like, what behaviors warranted this? And how long did it take before they felt that the behaviors were resolved? And, you know, what were they seeing? I don't know. It just sounds like a lot if somebody's upset that a staff member is not wearing a mask. But, you know, of course, we never know the circumstances. That's why I wondered if there's any way that we can ever see the documentation.
Yeah, we can see documentation on seclusions. But with this, I think someone else stood up for him and that person got seclusion. I don't think this patient got seclusion. This patient lost levels and lost his ability to go to work.
And we can't find out why?
Well, I think that's what we're going to ask why, because administration said, well, that's not the reason why they lost privileges. Well, I can't, because of the way ASHA set it up, they want us to vote on everything. So I, in the meeting, could not say, well, then tell me why. I have to come back to the committee because no one else was on there with me, right? And we have to vote on it. Then we have to go back to them and say, please show us why this patient lost levels and work. And then they'll come back to us with their answer.
Okay. Yeah, I'm sorry I couldn't get on with you. I've been working nights. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Okay.
So I'd like to ask why, and did anyone second that?
Alice seconds it.
Alice seconds. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Okay. Now the other two things that came in for us were that I got a mail, and I was trying to open it up, but it was from, I think, a patient or a patient's family saying that they weren't getting their mail due to staff shortages. And I thought it was pinyin, but I couldn't find the mail tonight when I was going to look for it. So I wanted to, it was after our meeting with ASH administration, so I wanted to put the motion up. Are patients getting their mail in a timely manner? So do we have a second on that?
This is Dee. I'll second that because I can attest to the fact that that stuff is happening. My son always writes the date, you know, on the back that he sends something to me, and sometimes it'll take weeks to get to me.
Okay, so we'll ask. Is everyone in favor of asking that?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay. Aye.
So moved. The other thing that was really concerning, and I won't name the patient's name here, but we have heard from certain patients, and when we've called, when they've asked for patient visits, that all of a sudden someone will say, well, they don't want to talk to the IOC because they don't want to get in trouble. They don't want to talk to the IOC because that interferes with their progression. So when I brought that up to administration, they said that most of the staff never listened to the IOC recordings. They know nothing about the IOC. But I said, well, to me, it's very suspicious that a treating psychologist told a patient in their meeting that the IOC has no authority over ASH, that talking to the IOC with problems tells them that he's being passive aggressive by discussing problems with an outside agency. He should just talk to the team or use a grievance process. And I said, that is absolutely not okay if you're punishing people or telling them they can't talk to the IOC. And also that they could not even bring up the possibility of outings, and that the person's support team or attorney should not ever talk during an ITDP meeting because it was wasting their time. Now, when I brought this up and I talked about the doctor that did say this, the chief medical officer said that that doctor had approached Dr. Woods, CMO, and asked about the IOC because they were not familiar with it. I said, so I find this very, and Dr. Woods said this was months ago, told them what the IOC does and that that she's absolutely certain that this doctor would not say that. For us, this patient has signed release of information, so we have access. We could ask for the records and see exactly, was this said? Is it documented or not? Because they should not be threatening patients and punishing them for talking to the IOC. Do you think we should ask to see this specific incident?
Okay, so my question is, when we ask these questions, where's the proof? I mean, they give us these answers, but they just seem so like they're placating us. I'm not seeing proof.
Yeah.
They can say whatever they want.
That's why I'd like to see the documentation. Show us the treatment, the meeting notes, the treatment team plan. See if they are writing this in there.
Yep, exactly. Because, I mean, the chart review that I did didn't show me anything. No treatment team info, nothing.
So we could ask for the treatment team notes on this specific incident. So do we want to do this and see if we can...
Excuse me, this is RD on Pinion.
I can't let you talk until it's public time, but if you hang out a few more minutes, probably in about another, I'd say, 8 to 10 minutes, then we should go into public time where you can speak.
Lori, this is Dr. Potts. You could also ask with the ROI any correspondence, email, and otherwise between that psychologist and Dr. Woods in reference to the patient or other matters.
Okay.
Just a thought.
Okay, and I like that.
Yeah, and okay.
Okay, so in addition to asking for treatment team notes, any correspondence between that specific psychologist, which I have the name, and Dr. Woods regarding IOC or IOC communications and the patients. Do I have a second?
Alice seconds it.
All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. Leon?
Aye.
Okay. So moved.
Lori, I didn't give a report. May I do that?
Yes, please.
This is Dr. Potts. Just an update from the Central Arizona IOC. We did not meet 2 days ago. We didn't have a quorum. A couple things that are important, though. There was a statewide IOC chair meeting, which include DDD. We were talking then. I think those are valuable. And I know Lori was on that. But I think it might be something if we could have like a whole forum of all the IOC committee members. We used to do this for the mental health ones, but where we could sort of talk and spend, you know, we can talk with each other and make suggestions how we do this, how do we solve this problem, what are different approaches to take, et cetera. And maybe look at that. It could be a virtual meeting, but something to think about. We could even invite someone like Ann Ronan to give a 15-minute presentation. Mm-hmm. As an aside, when you're trying to get staffing issues, like you talked earlier, mm-hmm. one of the things we're not doing, and which we've used in our committee, is getting a Freedom of Information Act request. And that's something I'm not familiar with, but we had a journalist who helped us gather some information on boarding homes through an FOIA. So you know, those things the government has to provide, and they had to have someone collate the information we want because it wasn't immediately downloadable, but they did get that for us. So there may be other ways of getting information through such means of freedom of information versus just the IOC issues, which they can back and forth you on. But anyway, the other thing that the IOC is looking at is we're trying to keep up on the statutes, the proposed statutes. And that's something that Ms. Giesel is very good at doing when we do meet. We haven't didn't have any updates. No, there's some that directly impact the state hospital and other areas. And the last point from our Central Arrows is on ILC is I really appreciate, as do your members, the improvement in the website that ADOA and Larry have done to make it more manageable, and with the information provided on the website, it's very nice. So that's my report. Any questions for me from Central Arizona ILC?
No, but we so appreciate you on here, Jack, because as a psychiatrist, your insights really help.
Thank you.
Okay, so I'll run through some of these reports. We had a death on forensic. It's ASH 2021-5058 on 12/17/2021. A patient came out of a restroom into the day room and collapsed in front of E460, I don't know what that is, vomiting from nose and mouth, not responsive, code blue called, but he did not survive. So that was in the report. Remember previously, you know, we have had some successes. Previously we were not getting death reports. Now we are, so that's good. Let's see.
Lori, was that the individual who was left in the day room dead for hours?
I don't know.
You may want to check on that. There has been an individual within the last month, understanding at State Hospital, who did die, who was possibly may have been deliberate indifference regarding an infection. But the bottom line is that one patient was apparently left there for hours until the medical examiner could or could not come and retrieve the body. And in those deaths like that, in a hospital, one would want to suggest, did they employ the crash cart? Was it available? Was it fully stocked?
It said that the code blue was called, code cart was on the scene, CPR administered by Rover nurse and responding staff until the fire department arrived.
How long was this patient passed away? Because, for example, last night as the RN on shift, once again, I had to remind my tech, shine the light on the patient, not so that it wakes them up, make sure they're breathing and okay. Because more than once I have seen seizures where they aspirate or other things happen because of drug reactions or, you know, different things that can cause seizures. You know, there's a lot of psych patients that do have seizures. And so, you know, they're supposed to do Q15 minute or more checks. So why would there be somebody in an area that has passed away, and not just a crash cart on site, but 911 should be called and they should be there within about 5 to 10 minutes.
I think the issue with this one may also be, it's always good to see a time between the incident and that 911 was called in response. But the other issue on this one may have been that the patient was left. It was the death and the acute emergency was viewed by everyone, but the body was left in sight of patients for hours.
But why would there be a body left in sight?
That's a question.
Would 911 be called? Freedom of Information Act, like you said.
The reason is because they were probably pronounced at the scene.
Okay.
And left for the ME to pick up.
Yeah.
They don't transport dead bodies. So that's just an interesting question. And Lori, I don't know if this is the one, but I've heard that from another party. I can tell you privately, but it may be an interesting issue.
So this one, the incident happened at 21:30, and they said that the, 21:30, code blue was called at 21:31. Code was rushed. AED was put on. 911 was called at 21:36. So 6 minutes after the incident, and the paramedics arrived at 21:49. The paramedics stopped CPR at 21:58. The medical examiner they took a call from their office at 2:30 a.m. So from 21:58 when they stopped it to 23:58 when the medical office called back. So maybe that's what.
That's it.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Excuse me. I'm sorry to interrupt again. It's just confounding to me because whenever I've had a patient pass away and I know that there is no bringing them back, which has actually only been once, thank God, they took the patient and worked on them some more, as far as I know, in the ambulance, and they went straight to the ED. We have never kept a patient who has coded. And maybe it's different at CBI than it is at ASH, but it just, the whole thing confounds me. Maybe it's a different rule book. I don't know, but we're mental hospitals. We are not, you know, and even if it was a regular medical center, patients are covered up in a bed away from others.
Yeah. So let's ask, was the patient taken away or left in the day room for the medical examiner for a period of time?
Okay.
And were other patients permitted to be there to see this, et cetera, or were they locked down, or what happened?
You locked them down immediately. Whenever there's a medical emergency, I tell everybody, go to your room, please, immediately, because that's traumatizing, very traumatizing.
Right, and so that's why the question should be asked.
Okay. Were other patients, was this visible to other patients? Okay, do we have, that was Alice seconded it, all in favor?
Aye.
Okay.
All right. In addition, would we be able to get the video footage?
We could ask to see the video.
It would,
video footage, yes.
Instead of having them give us the runaround, you know what I mean?
Okay. Can we see the video footage of the incident?
Yes.
Okay. So that was, who suggested that?
That was Kay.
Okay, Kay, thank you. Do we have a second?
I'll second that. This is Dee.
Dee will second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. All moved. We will look at that. Let's see. Oh, I had another one, and this will, someone may be able to answer this. This is ASH incident 2021-4852, patient threatening other patients, seclusion and restraints. And the thing that jumped out to me, both patients after the scuffle were put on NBCR and conducted to the unit and taken to seclusion room. What's N as in Nancy, B as in Bird, C as in Cold, R as in Robert? What is that? Do we know?
As a psych nurse, I can tell you that I've never heard of it.
Okay. I just wanted to ask, what is N? They were put on MBCR, so I wanted to know. So I'll make that quick motion. Do I have a second?
I'll second it. This is C.
Few seconds. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay. Again, let me look at the other. Let's see. This one was unusual. ASH 2021-4889, and a patient approached an RN, and they were doing some inappropriate behaviors, and then they slapped the writer's breast, and both patients, both nurses left. But then Phoenix PD were contacted to press sexual assault by the person, the writer, that the patient touched her breast. I was surprised that, I don't know. I don't know whether they had to or that kind of surprised me. Because they are in a psychiatric hospital. I don't know if that surprises you guys, but jumped out to me.
Well, this is Alice. I will say I'm surprised. If somebody is beat up badly mm-hmm. and harmed, yes, I can understand Phoenix PD.
Yeah.
However, something like that, it would seem to me, would be a completely different story. That just doesn't seem, I don't know, I wouldn't be allowed to call Phoenix PD. I'd probably be out of a job, to be honest, in a case like that.
Okay. The next one is Ash 2021-4896, and a patient struck a registry nurse, and it was really, and they did repeatedly struck. I mean, I'm telling you just a few, but there are like 100 pages of incidents. 99% on the civil campus. And the fourth strike came so hard it caused a 3-inch laceration. Now
So the that's patient, PD.
So that patient went to the Valleywise to get stitched up, and they put the person in seclusion and to return to their room. But there was no PD called then.
Well, no. It doesn't always happen that way, you know, it just depends on the situation. We have ways that we handle it. I mean, a lot of times it just means CPI and, you know, sometimes shots and things to calm the patient down. Maybe a 15-minute seclusion while they just, you know, kind of get their heads together.
Yeah. And we had another interesting one, Ash 2021-5006, and this person was climbing on a chair doing backflips, trying to kill themselves. And they did hit their head and shoulder, and so they're monitoring. So they put the patient on COS-LOS due to significant risk of self-injury, and they nursing recommended updating the suicide risk assessment and talking to the treatment team because of this, because they said, I did it because I wanted to kill myself. So that was one day. And then we had another one, that same patient, then about within 2 weeks, was doing the same thing off their bed, doing front flips. And that time they said they didn't want to harm themselves, and they had been taken off COS-LOS. So now they notified the psychiatrist, and the psychiatrist at that point placed them on COS-HR 2-1 as ordered. Yeah, so it seems like he was had behaviors, was put on, must have shown significant improvement within the 2 weeks, was taken off sometime, and then happened again and put back on.
That actually sounds pretty normal to me. It's not uncommon. Yeah.
Okay. Let me see if there's anything else. The other... last one, I'm seeing if there was anything else. Yeah, that one. We did get a letter that the rest of the IOC got that this is really disturbing. It's a parent, and they said they want to make sure that we are aware that they received a letter from, this is on the 18th, 1-18-2022, regarding a breach of your ward's protected health information, which was remotely accessed by a BHMP's laptop that was inappropriately accessed through my avatar. The BHMP then used another Ash computer before changing the password, a list of patient names, which included their loved one's full name, medical record numbers, was captured by the hacker. Supposedly an investigation took place, and we as family and guardians now have to be on the monitor for any suspicious activity to accounts, etc. A huge troubling point to this is the fact that the incident occurred on November 23rd, 2021, almost 2 full months ago, and they just received the letter in the mail 2 months later. They're very frustrated that it would take that long to be notified that there has been a breach of medical information and potential and hackers. So that would be a HIPAA violation too.
That's definitely a HIPAA violation.
So we can ask why, if it happened on November 23rd, 2021, why weren't guardians notified sooner? I mean, do you guys think that's reasonable?
Usually,
I
when
think
things,
so.
Yeah, usually when things happen, we notify the guardian right away because that's imperative. It's as far as I know, it's protocol.
So do we have a second on that, asking why it took so long to notify?
Yeah, I'll second it. Let's see.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll second that.
Okay, and then we got another message which we sent to, I think, I'm not sure if I got it or Larry got it or someone got it, that a director, it was an email saying that a director is covering up staff beating on a patient named so-and-so. So we did forward that on. ASH administration said that this particular person is a disgruntled employee. I'm not sure. I think we don't know much about this, but they were saying that help fight for human rights in Arizona. So we are trying to fight for human rights at ASH. Okay, so is there anything else before we open up for public comment? I have a hard stop at 7:30. So we have a good, 12 minutes left? Is there anything the committee would like to bring up that was on the agenda that we didn't get to, or that any new business that they'd like us to talk about?
Yeah, this is Leon. I just wanted to apologize to the committee about any misrepresentation I might have accidentally given about the resolution group at the state hospital. Time has a funny way of expressing itself when you're in there. So It's possible I was in resolution group for quite a while longer than 2 weeks, but I don't remember it being that long. But I could be wrong on that. So I'll go ahead and admit that.
No worries, Leon. We just we tell things the way we remember it, and But thank you for that. We did get a new application for a new member. So after public comment, if we want to take a quick vote, so I can tell you, I know he's on but can't speak, but he is a medical physician and is taking forensic psychology, getting a master's in that. So he would like to join the group. He was director of an emergency room for 40 plus years. So he's used to trauma and drama and the way things run in hospitals. So I think that would be a good benefit. Happens to be my husband, but it's not unprecedented. I know Northern Arizona Committee, Dorothy O'Brien is chair, and Karen, I think her husband is also on the committee. So I think I forwarded it to committee members, and we could vote, or we could wait next month and vote. Any questions?
No, I mean, I don't know if we can vote now, but yeah, I think that would be wonderful.
Yeah, I think we have to vote in executive.
Sounds like a good plan, executive, sorry.
Okay, so we can open it up for public comment. And remember, when you speak for public comment, let us know your name if you want to be identified in the meeting minutes. You can go and have public comment as anonymous as well. And I know, so it's opened up for public comment. Whoever would like to speak, we usually time it to 3 minutes, so we give everyone time.
Hi, this is Timothy Verbrisco on Mojave.
Hi, Tim. How are you?
I'm okay. I have one question. You guys said patient forum is on what day? February.
Let me look real quick.
I'm sorry.
No, no worries. Forensic forum is February 18th at 1 p.m.
18th at 1 p.m. Okay. My things are COVID is here and it's really strong. It's in 3 units as of today. It's here to stay. And so I think they, Ash, can't keep on not giving outing passes. They got to quit blaming Omicron sometime because nobody's ever going to progress if they just keep blaming COVID. That's played out. The sitting in the at the table spot, I'm still sitting in a fire hazard spot. Whether the dining room is full or empty, the reason is I'm still too big and fat to sit at the table. I have to sit in my walker, and it doesn't go over the bench. I was told today as staffing, you need to have full mall to obtain computer lab by my team. I asked for full mall last month, and they said, well, we'll think it over and let you know next staffing. Well, they came, they still haven't came to a decision about it as of today. I told them to keep it, then I'm tired of trying. I'm on a 90 to 120 day shuffle program. So how will my new team ever be able to decide? And also I don't see any change in my progression in the near future for quite some time due to having another new team and another new team because they can't, you know, get to know me and progress me any further every 3 to 4 months. I filed a few grievances, got no response. I called Access and left a message. These grievances were from November and December. So I refiled them, the same grievances. I printed them off. I have a template that somebody gave me. I printed them off on the computer, and I submitted them again. It took a while, but I did receive 3 extensions, yet I never did get the 3 acknowledgement letters from the first or second round of grievances. So that's where I stand, and the medical issue is still going on. This is going, let's see, 2009, 2018, 2019. This would be the 3rd year, I believe. Thank you. You guys have a good one. Thank you.
Thanks, Tim.
Yep.
Okay. Who else would like to speak?
This is Nathan Sego.
And would you like your name in the minutes?
Sure.
Okay.
So I used to be on opinion. The whole unit, I mean, the verbal abuse is bad enough, but they have assigned seating at every meal. You're not allowed to sit anywhere else, not even in the day room. You're not allowed to sit in the day room. You're not allowed to do any of that. Every unit, you're allowed to eat in the day room, to my knowledge, except for Pinion. You have assigned seating at every meal in the dining area. Even during the coronavirus epidemic, we told staff while I was over there that this is a hazard, and they still didn't listen. And now they have about 15 patients with COVID last I checked. So that's all I have to say.
Thank you, Nathan.
Yes, this is Robert Dunn off of Pinion. Nathan is correct about the seating, and we first started off with one person with COVID. They weren't on quarantine for 3 days. Then another four people got COVID, and then they started implementing quarantine procedures. By that time, patients were able to eat in their room that were sick, and they were not allowed to come out and use the phone. They were allowed to shower and use the bathroom, but they had a specific shower and specific bathroom that they had to use. Now there's like 12, 13 patients, including myself, and I have a medical issue which endangers me even more for COVID. So I've been fighting COVID for 5 days now. So hopefully I get over that. The deal about the treatment team meetings, about them having documentation, I've noticed that Dr. Boddy has two cell phones whenever he comes into the meetings. And usually he will press a button or two, maybe even a couple, on his phone while he's, you know, doing your meeting and stuff, as you're walking in and as you're leaving. So I don't know if you would be able to use the Freedom of Information Act to get whatever documentation he's using on his phone for the treatment team meetings. I know that one of the other doctors, she usually is sitting there typing away, and so is the social worker. But on my last ITP review, which was on the 12th, I still have not gotten my job back. I did, however, get my levels back on the 5th of January. So I'm happy about that. My family's happy, and beyond anything else, I hope to see that I get my job back and hope that I get to the back to my levels. So if there's anything else you ladies and Leon would like any information or more information that I'm not divvying out right now, please don't hesitate to call me. The young fellow that's in the room with me now, he talks to you guys. If he wants to talk to you, I'll let him do so.
Sure. Hey. Hi, this is Matthew Solman.
Hi, Matthew.
Hi, how are you guys?
Good.
I guess, first of all, can you guys come see me or talk to me over the phone when you get a chance?
Yes.
There's a lot more to talk about than what we can talk about here. There's a bunch of stuff I'd like to talk about, but I think we should probably keep it simple. The most pressing issue on this unit this week is clearly the COVID. Mm. And one patient got it, what was that, about 2 weeks, a week and a half ago? So one patient got COVID. She right away told the staff that she was having symptoms. They tested her. Next day she tested positive. They tested the bulk of the unit that day. Three or four or five people then tested positive, and they quarantined those people to their rooms. That only lasted about 3 days. And then staff came out and announced that by order of the unit, all of the COVID positive patients would be allowed to come out and intermingle with the COVID negative patients so long as they wore a mask. Which wasn't consistent. And about, I would say, 3 or 4 days later, almost everyone in here was having COVID symptoms. They retested on, you think it was Saturday or Sunday? Sunday. And now almost the entire unit is tested positive. I don't think it was handled correctly at all. In addition, for me, since I don't handle group situations well, And as Nathan said earlier, this unit forces everybody to eat in the dining area. So because I'm not able to and refuse to eat with all the other people in the dining area, as long as I've been on this unit, has forced me to eat after everyone else is done eating. By that time, my food is lukewarm usually. But I've been doing it because I don't have any other option. So after they started telling the patients that they could come out and eat, that tested positive, I would go in and eat after all the other patients finished, and now they were forcing all the COVID patients to eat with me at the same time. And at that point, everyone had their masks off. And I complained about it to the staff, and the lead tech, 3 days in a row, Dorothy, insisted that if I refused to go in and eat with a COVID patient, she would throw my food away. And then my roommate tested positive, and they didn't separate us, even though I hadn't been tested and was non-symptomatic. So, yeah, I don't think they're handling it properly at all here. And this particular unit houses some of the geriatric patients. So there's three patients that are elderly, and I'm pretty sure they're all experiencing symptoms, although I don't know if they allow themselves to be tested. There's a bunch of other stuff, but I think that's all I can give you for today. So if you can give me a call, that'd be great.
Okay, thank you.
This is Nathan Sago again.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to mention, while I was on opinion, I've witnessed staff sit in on IOC meetings and refuse to leave. It's been usually mostly lead techs. I think every lead tech's done it at least once over there from my experience. And I don't know if they're still doing this or if that type of, I have to call it abuse, is still going on. So that's all I have to comment on.
Thank you. Do we have anyone else that we haven't heard from? We're 3 minutes over from a hard stop. Anyone else?
Yes. Hi, Lori. This is Summer. And I'm okay with being on record. A couple things I wanted to address. My brother is on the civil side, and for a while now, there has been a significant decrease and shortage of staffing to a level that I feel is tremendously unsafe. My brother himself, I think, experienced an assault from a patient, not once, but twice within a 24-hour period because there was so little staff. A patient had approached my brother, and, you know, threw blows at him, and my brother retaliated and beat the guy up pretty bad, and they did not separate them at all. They kept him on the same unit. The very next morning, same patient went after my brother and punched him in the head again, and my brother went after him, and the staff tried to go after my brother, and no staff was even witnessing it. The patients had to stick up for my brother and say, no, you know, he wasn't the one that started it. It was the same patient. It wasn't until that moment that they finally separated them. My concern is that I feel like I know that assaults and things of that nature will occur just because the nature of the hospital in and of itself. But I think a lot of the behaviors, the incidents could be prevented or, you know, prevented from the escalation that they get to have they had appropriate staff. I've been there to visit. I visit my brother every week. I have witnessed myself where they are so understaffed that they are having to have the security team members go and man the units. And that concerns me because as far as I'm concerned, the security people are not as trained as the techs or the nurses to be able to intervene in an appropriate manner to de-escalate. So as of right now, those are and also let me add, because they're so short staffed for the last 2 weeks, my brother hasn't been able to go to his program. I mean, the patients are being confined to the unit. They are getting a tiny bit of mall time, but he's not able to participate in his therapeutic programs, you know, to help him with gaining some stability and working on the things that he needs to work on. So there's definitely a delay in treatment for him and the other patients, and due to the staffing. So I am concerned about that. And I think it's something, if you guys can address that, that would be great.
Okay, thank you. Do we have anyone else we haven't heard from?
Please, this is Tim. One second. They said that the tablets and whatever, the computers that you guys were going to get us would take away from our attention span and divert us from what we need to be doing. Is that correct? Well, the staff have that bad problem with their phones. They're on them all day, playing games, watching movies on the floor, and they're not supposed to be out of the nurse's station. That's all. Thank you.
Okay. Anyone else before we call it a night? I am over someplace I have to be. So can I call to adjourn and we can vote on our new member next time? Do I have a second?
Yeah. Second.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Okay, guys, be safe. I will see you soon. Thank you. And we'll get together and do some patient visits.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.